Welcome back to a new week at The Damage Report. Can you guess what we're gonna talk about today? I have a few ideas. Brooks, here too.
There's some options.
She has ideas as well.
So we could talk about The Lion King.
I don't necessarily want to because I've heard some negative stuff and that just depresses me too much. Because I was really looking forward to it.
No, stop. It's
Aladdin and Lion King in like a month and both the reviews are bad. Come on.
Because people don't like to enjoy things.
I suspect that as well.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I think there's a lot of people who are like liking things. Not liking it.
Oh my gosh, someone is happy. No, gotta kill it.
Yeah, I think, This is totally needless, like diversion or whatever. But the people who are like proud to not like certain foods, I will never understand that.
Yeah.
Like if you could like something, that would be better, wouldn't it?
No, for sure, for sure.
It would definitely be
better. That's how I feel about cilantro.
Exactly, which I don't like, but I wish that I did.
You don't like cilantro?
And black licorice, which is the best food. But anyway, aside from black licorice, there is other stuff going on, like The Lion King. I'm kidding. So we have a lot that we're gonna be talking about.
The Lion King.
I don't know what's gonna happen this week. It's really hot in here. Anyway, so look, we've got two awesome guests are gonna be joining us. We'll be talking about what a war with Iran would look like. Spoiler alert, bad for us and them. We're gonna be talking about the rise of AI and conscious computers, what it could mean for the economy, entertainment, and perhaps even the US government. And you know what else we're gonna talk about, so why don't we just jump into it? Because Donald Trump still has his phone, and so this is the sort of thing that happens on Sunday.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Donald Trump has really topped himself this time. Yesterday on Twitter, he went on a racist rant, and I'm calling it that because that's what it is, and I don't work for the New York Times or all these other outlets that refuse to call it what it is. He attacked the squad, the group of new congresswomen, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Rashida Tlaib, and said that they should go back where they come from. Now, there's a few issues with that, but we want to show you what the most powerful person in the world said. He said, so interesting to see progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all. Now, loudly and viciously telling the people of the US, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how it's done? These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements. So that is the president of the United States telling four women of color who are representatives in the US Congress to go back where they came from, which as we're going to describe, there's some logistical problems with that since they come from here.
It's never really about where people come from. It's just, you know, you're un-American because you are not white. Mm-hmm. And that's just all it was. It was, and what, just for, I guess, what was shocking to me is that the president of the United States clearly still does not totally understand Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And
he
Puerto
thinks it's another country,
exactly,
I think.
Which is not even okay for 5-year-olds in this country.
Yeah.
But definitely not the person who is the people in Puerto Rico, this is your president.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't seem to understand that.
Yeah.
He seems to think, that it's another country. I hate breaking this down and analyzing. And a lot of people over the weekend were spending time pointing out that, you know, AOC, Representative Tlaib, Representative Pressley, all born in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. This was just a racist attack. It was unnecessary. It was disgusting. And I think that if you support this man, you are of this man. Mm-hmm. If you support this behavior, you are of this behavior. And if you don't call out this bad behavior, you are supporting it. You're condoning it.
Yeah.
Because the reasons that you wouldn't say, hey, this is racist, it's not okay, those reasons aren't more valuable than being against racism.
Yeah.
When you have the power, and we're talking about people in power, and even on the left, it's not enough to just say, you know, I disavow this. We're shutting this down. It's not okay, especially when you are in power to do something about this type of behavior, because these type of words, they do often lead to violence. This is the type of belief that gets black people killed,
mm-hmm,
that gets Latin Americans killed and hurt, and little Latin American kids treated like they aren't so smart for having a grasp on Spanish as 5-year-old kindergartners and instead treated like they're nothing and they're other, and that affects people for the rest of their lives. And if you don't immediately speak out against this, you are of this. And if you can do something about this and you don't, I don't know. I don't know where to put you.
I have some ideas.
Okay.
No, we're gonna have some response from slightly more responsible people a little bit later on. But on this, it's just screaming in your face white supremacy as the official position of the US government. That's all it is, because what he's saying is that you don't get to have an opinion about the US government if ever in the past your ancestors came from a place that's not predominantly white. Now, some lying racist Republicans will say, no, he's just saying about immigrants. But that's the, no, not really, because AOC's family ostensibly, I mean, they're from the mainland, but from Puerto Rico, if you go far enough back, you have to go way farther back for Anna Pressley because of the disgusting legacy of racism in this country. For her, Donald Trump's family's like 2.5 generations in this country. They've been around way longer than Donald Trump.
That is a point that somebody made. I wish I could think of the name that somebody made that is hilarious, that a lot of white people who love to tell black people specifically, go back to Africa, go back where you came from because of the slave trade. And because of immigration of white people to America, the black people, their families were here first.
Yeah. Yeah, my family came over like 80 years ago, okay? Around the time, I guess, Donald Trump's. That's a lot more recent than some of these people that he's saying should go back. And it's just stupid racism. Not that they're smart racism, those two go hand in hand, but it's just dumb. It's just really, really dumb. And one of the things that's dumb about it is the people who should know better, the institutions who should know better, who won't call it what it is. So New York Times initially reported it as Trump stoking racial divisions and using a lowest rung slur, widely regarded as beyond the pale. So what RAC was in that, but not racist. Now they have updated it by saying, deeply uncomfortable, as many Republicans are, with Mr. Trump's racially infused politics.
What is that
It's about? Not infused like a LaCroix. It's not like there's an essence of racism in there. It's racist. That's what it is. And stop implying, by the way, that Republicans are deeply disturbed by it. If they're disturbed by it, they're silently disturbed by it. Because as of right now, and we're gonna wait until the end of the show to cover the Republicans, if there's any who have criticized him, the reason we're waiting is because it hasn't happened yet, okay?
Right.
So they're not that deeply uncomfortable with it. It doesn't appear.
Also,
and it's racist. And nobody will say it. GMA this morning and CNN's New Day referred to the tweets as racist.
Thank
Everyone else
goodness.
Is like, it's the go back tweets.
And disclaimer, we, the two of us are, and Anna Kasparian, LaCroix super fans, so forgive
us. So we get to say.
For those horrifying references, okay, thank you.
Okay, but what are you infused?
No, you're right. Yeah.
It's like, man, this Cabernet is infused with notes of walnut. No, it's white supremacy, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think someone else said.
Democracy dies in your stupidity. Own up.
A sprinkling of of the desire to protect the future of white children.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. There's notes of the KKK. Okay, so look, he was criticized a lot, not by any Republicans or anyone who actually has a direct line to him, but he was criticized. And I think that he has taken those criticisms to heart, and that's why this morning he tweeted, "When will the radical left congresswoman apologize to our country, the people of Israel, and even to the office of the president for the foul language they have used and the terrible things they have said? So many people are angry at them and their horrible and disgusting actions." So they're horrible, they're disgusting, they're terrible. "If Democrats want to unite around the foul language and racist hatred spewed from the mouths and actions of these very unpopular and unrepresentative congresswomen, it will be interesting to see how it plays out. I can tell you that they have made Israel feel abandoned by the US." So they're unpopular and unrepresentative, even though they actually won their elections and he got less votes than the person he was running against. And here's the thing, how often have we heard recently, they just call everything racism? Everything that we say, they just say it's racism. He's saying that they're racist. I'm sure Ben Shapiro is gonna be very frustrated by that.
There was so much of that over the weekend, Friday, Thursday. Do not find yourself in a position where you are attempting to shut down a person of color's experience Because you can have a best friend who you feel like is the greatest person ever, who you feel like could never do anything wrong. And because you are not always in their head and in their body, they can still make a mistake and be a person who pushes microaggressions, be a person who maybe unintentionally is racist, does racist things, finds herself in a moment where she doesn't want to listen to women of color. Historically, like, you know what I mean? Don't find yourself black or white.
Who are you thinking specifically about?
I just think that this has happened a lot. You've had a lot of people coming to Nancy Pelosi's defense saying that AOC was pulling the race card, which I don't think she ever called her racist. I'm pretty clear that she did not say that. But
she said it's a pattern of targeting.
Exactly. Yeah. Which don't, and I remember Joy Behar, who I'm obsessed with on The View, saying, oh, I don't think it's fair that she pulled the race card. You cannot ever tell a woman of color what she experienced. And you have no idea on a daily basis what a woman of color deals with her friends, with her coworkers, with her doctor, with, you know, her bosses, people every day, people in school, her classmates, you know, people who are not her friends, you know, God forbid, but the president of the United States. You cannot ever feel like you know someone so well that you can just shut down a woman of color's experience as a woman of color in this country with another person.
Yeah.
And it may be offensive, but then work on that. You know, try to see what she's talking about, try to see where she's coming from, but it makes it worse. And it wasn't just Joy, it wasn't just, you know, a white woman. It was, there were a black members of Congress also defending Nancy Pelosi, and it doesn't matter. You can, not in that way, you cannot shut down a woman of color's experience. And I think that there are ways to defend Nancy Pelosi. If you feel like she's in the right on this, I'm fine with that. But you cannot say that what AOC said was unfair.
Yeah.
Because you don't get her experiences, and that just makes it, that's a microaggression. Like saying, no, the phrase race card is a microaggression. It's a little racist. Stop saying it, stop using it. That is so bothersome. And then there was even in defense of them, there's been so many missteps. Even after this racist tweet outburst, there's been, you know, hey, they say really outrageous things, but this is bad. How about they don't say outrageous things? How about you don't walk through the world like they do.
And well, why don't we get their words?
Okay, let's go for it. Okay.
Yeah, because they have, thankfully, they have a platform and they have an audience to defend themselves to. So here's what they said.
Twitter or whatever.
Twitter or whatever. You're on Pelosi's side? I can't tell. Okay, so let's turn to that now. Following the president's racist rant against the squad, which they use as a slur, I like it. I want to have a squad. I want to have people who represent me and my values. But anyway, they defended themselves with AOC. Actually, she was stopped this morning. So we're going to show you just a little bit of video of her responding to what happened.
Okay. It's unfortunate that he feels the way he feels about people of color in this country. It's unfortunate the way he feels about immigrants, naturalized citizens or not in this country. But I think what I would tell him is that it's time to move on from him, and it's time to move on from his conception of an America that we have tried to move past for a long time.
As you say, race relations, a deep issue in this country. This is a deliberate move from the leader of this country.
Absolutely, it is. And that is because he relies on racism, division, and anti-immigrant sentiment to consolidate power because he does not have a positive vision for the future of America.
She is 100% right there, and it's sad that his base can't see that. That they're being fed fear of others, and they choose, you know, a different group. They tend to cycle back to people crossing the southern border quite often. But just here's some people to hate.
His base has just found somebody who speaks for them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's irrational, it's racist, it's disgusting, and people who support him are of the same.
Exactly, yeah. They like that
nobody
about him, and they always have.
From him, exactly.
Yeah, policy-wise, it's very similar to a lot of the other Republicans ran in 2016. The thing that differentiated him was that the racism was more blatant. Now, AOC also said on Twitter, Mr. President, the country I come from, and the country we all swear to is the United States, but given how you destroyed our border with inhumane camps, all at a benefit to you and the corps who profit off them, you are absolutely right about the corruption laid at your feet. You are angry because you can't conceive of an America that includes us. You rely on a frightened America for your plunder. I love the way that she put that. Also saying, but you know what? What's the rub of it all, Mr. President? On top of not accepting an America that elected us, you cannot accept that we don't fear you either. You can't accept that we will call your bluff and offer a positive vision for this country, and that's what makes you seethe. And the popularity, the fact that they've all been embraced by the country. These are people that he has tried to keep down his entire life, long before politics, when he was a businessman and he was trying to reject people like these representatives for apartments or rejecting them for jobs. Like, he has fought his whole life against people like this, and they're not scared of him. I think that does scare him, and it certainly enrages him.
No white politician ever has to tell you that they swear loyalty to the United States. Even the fact that they have all had to start their sentences, basically their statements in response to blatant racism with that, is so telling and so harmful. We have actual laws in spaces in this country where, you know, you can be punished for protesting against Israel in a country where it is legal to protest. It is your right to protest.
You can be
right, exactly. But no one who brings a bill like that forward has to say, but hey, my loyalty is to this country.
Well, and that's the thing, like, in his tweets where he's like, you guys should go back to this other country that your values are closer to. He's also saying, apologize to the US, also apologize to Israel. So I'm concerned about your connections to other countries. I want you to apologize to another country I have picked.
Yeah, this is
when have they ever done that?
He should have to take an eighth grade civics course, because I'm uncomfortable, not just with his racism, but with his grasp on our country.
Or reality.
Exactly, so the definitions of certain things.
So let's hear from a couple of the other members who were targeted there. Rashida Tlaib said, want a response to a lawless and complete failure of a president? He is the crisis. His dangerous ideology is the crisis. He needs to be impeached. And she has been constant on that since before she was actually sworn in. She has been proven right. Ayanna Pressley says, this is what racism looks like. We are what democracy looks like, and we're not going anywhere except back to DC to fight for the families you marginalize and vilify every day. Ilhan Omar says, Mr. President, as members of Congress, the only country we swear an oath to is the US, which is why we are fighting to protect it from the worst, most corrupt and inept president we have ever seen.
Can we leave that up? Because good point there, because I think for people outside of this country, seeing those tweets and knowing most of these women are actually were born in America, they think, oh yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
They do have a terrible country right now. Yeah. And that's sad.
That is sad. And so the breaking news as of this morning is that Nancy Pelosi is apparently considering having a condemnation for the statement on the House floor.
Listen, she has to take responsibility for her words. Her words led to this rhetoric. Exactly. Because
especially
when
with
you
Ilhan Omar.
Know people who don't look like you, who have been dealing with things that you have never had to deal with, that you will never even have to think about to the level that they do, when you know the level of vulnerability they have and you do what she did, it's not a problem that she disagreed with them in private. That's not a problem, but there were lots of interviews and there was a lot of back and forth, and she helped this. She helped put knowing
she put a target on the
how bench. She did, and that was irresponsible.
100%. And she has an opportunity to make good at least on a little bit of the damage that she's done.
And listen, Nancy Pelosi for so long had been a woman that I admire, just as a woman in America, but I'm also a black woman, and I know that what she did put them in danger.
Yeah.
It was dangerous. She has to take responsibility for that. And I imagine this morning and yesterday, she's realizing that.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
At present, it seems like Donald Trump is distracted with other things, and so he's taken a half step off the brink with Iran. But there's every reason to believe that, especially as we get closer to the election, he will feel more and more pressure to push for a completely needless and horrendous war with Iran. If that war were to come, what would it look like, though? Joining us now to break it down is national security reporter for Vox, Alex Ward. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on. And so you wrote a great article talking about some of the ways that we could that the war could start, how it might look were it to happen. So let's start from the beginning. What are some ways that you think are likely possible ways we would enter into some sort of conflict with Iran if we were to go in that direction?
So the first thing to believe is that because Iran wants sanctions off of its economy that the US has imposed, it may take a fairly violent action to get its point across. We already know that they've taken down a military drone. They could do that again. They could also attack an American oil tanker, causing loss of life and or a massive oil spill. They could launch a cyber attack on our allies in the region or even on the United States. And this would be an escalation from what they've done so far. And the reason to do so would, again, be to tell the US, hey, we want sanctions removed from our economy, so we're taking these actions in order to compel you to do so.
I'm not necessarily much of a psychologist. I have a feeling that would not convince Donald Trump to remove the sanctions. What do you think? Do you think that sort of provocation would get them what they're looking for?
Probably not. In fact, you would assume that the US would respond even higher and do its own sort of escalation. And then you get to a pretty rough point. And that rough point would be normally at a time like this, you have countries basically express their red lines to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, what are they, what do they not want each side to do? The problem is the US and Iran don't have those lines of communications open.
Yeah.
And so the risk here is that there's a massive miscalculation and that both sides effectively don't understand where they need to climb down from. And this could spill over into a pretty gruesome kind of conflict.
And so speaking about how gruesome the conflict could be, I feel like there's a lot of people in America, especially on the right side, who have a lot of confidence in our military and believe that were we to enter into a war with Iran, it would be like some of the other wars we've engaged in the past decade or two. Is that the case? Is Iran basically Iraq or Afghanistan or any of these other conflicts we've been involved in that would be some sort of easy thing? Like on Fox, they said it would be like a video game. It's just an air war you'd need.
I've been told by many experts that it could be, and in fact would likely be, like Iraq, but worse. So let's start here. If you imagine that the US goal here would be to basically make Iran submit as early as possible in a conflict, right? They would launch airstrikes with planes, with missiles from ships, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the goal here would be to effectively overwhelm Iran so early that it goes, oh, we don't want to fight anymore. But experts who study Iran very closely would say, no, that's unlikely to happen. Iran is unlikely to surrender. And so what they would then do is start their own, called asymmetric moves, which effectively would mean sending their proxies around the Middle East to attack US embassies and outposts. They would also launch cyber attacks on US businesses, on allies. They would also attack allies. And they could continue to mess with our ships and commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz using mines and drones and whatnot. So to believe that this would be a contained conflict, that it would be quick and easy, is incorrect. Now, is the US a more powerful military? Of course. If we wanted to, could we obliterate everything? Of course we could. The question is that worth it? And is it really viable for our goals? And I don't think many people would agree with that.
Well, and let's talk about a worst case scenario. So whether we enter into some sort of long and tractable conflict where they're expanding the scope of the theater to basically be the entire world with with terrorism, cyber terrorism, things like that, proxy actions, as well as the actual conflict there, as you point out, possibly just all out bombing to do as much damage as possible. I mean, how many dead are we potentially talking about in some sort of conflict?
So if we are looking at just the early escalation, the tit for tat couple hundred, right? Not great, but a couple hundred. If we're looking at the US and Iran really escalating into a full-blown war, we're looking at around thousands to even hundreds of thousands, really. And if we're looking at full-scale invasion, where the US goal is regime change in Iran, which is an unlikely and a near impossible task to do, but then you're looking at upwards of a million. And this is not even talking about, of course, the refugee issues, which would be, of course, millions of people in Iran and in the region would want to go elsewhere to seek asylum, even into Europe. And these countries, of course, are already fairly taxed with the Syrian refugee issue. So, I mean, this is a human scale, a human disaster on a massive scale that we could potentially see.
Yeah, I mean, you're describing basically a conflict unlike any we've had on Earth for decades and decades. And I feel like the sort of analysis that your article includes, and I highly advise everyone to go take a look at it on Vox, should be a part of the conversation, like the how far this could go, how much damage could actually be done. I feel like most of the media is still talking about this, like this is just gonna be some fun military adventure. You know, the stakes aren't that high, and I find that to be pretty terrifying. Okay, well, unfortunately, it looks like we did lose Alex, but that was Alex Ward of Vox, national security reporter. He's got an amazing write-up, including analysis from a lot of different experts, so you should go take a look at that, and it lays out in very stark terms how horrifying any sort of conflict with Iran could end up being. With that, we are going to take a short break. We come back, more to get to. So there you have Vice President Mike Pence with his arms crossed, very receptive to figuring out what's going on at the border facility he was dispatched to with a very casual looking Lindsey Graham. And when you send Pence and Graham, you know they're taking it seriously. And so they went down there just a few days ago to get an idea of what's going on at the border. And the way that they did that was by talking to the people in charge of the facility and not having any contact whatsoever with the people being held in it. Okay. So they probably learned a lot. Now, we're gonna have Pence's take on what he saw, as well as Trump's. But before we get to that, we want you to understand objectively what was there. And that's provided by members of the press who were in the vice president's media pool. And so this is an account from Vivian Salama of the Wall Street Journal, who said, after negotiating with the VP's office, Poole was taken into an outdoor portal at the McAllen border station, where there were 400 men in caged fences with no cots. The stench was horrendous. The cages were so crowded that it would have been impossible for them to all lay down. There were 384 single men in the portal who allegedly crossed the border illegally. There were no mats, no pillows. Some of the men were sleeping on concrete. When they saw the press arrive, they began shouting, telling us they'd been there for 40 days or longer. They said they were hungry and wanted to brush their teeth. It was sweltering hot. Agents were guarding the cages wearing face masks, which is again, always a good sign. Water was available outside the fences, and agents said the men could leave and get water when the press wasn't there, which is convenient when you say that they have rights that will only be allowable when the press isn't there to see it.
Right, so if you're thirsty, wait until the TV cameras leave. Sorry about your thirst.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's sweltering hot, and you've been there for 40 days. We'll get to you. We got the vice president to deal with right now. And so that's what was actually going on in that last facility. You can just add that on to all of the accounts and descriptions we've shown you from people in the facilities, congressional representatives who have visited there, HHS caseworkers that have talked to these people. So, but I wanted you to know that particular one because Pence said afterward that what he saw was evidence of a quote, system that was overwhelmed. So it's just a system, it was a funding issue, as they keep saying. He said, but what's not real is the slanderous allegations of heartless mistreatment by Customs and Border Protection. I can see it in your eyes, I can hear it in your voice about the care and concern. So he looked into the eyes and listened to the voice.
People who were covering their eyes wearing masks?
Exactly. Well, the eyes were, he couldn't see their teeth, I guess.
Okay.
But so he talked to them, and they say, we didn't do anything bad, and he believed them. He did not talk to the actual people being held there. And so all of these accounts are all just lies because CBP professionals who are worried about consequences say that it's not true.
Right, he did talk. There was one exception of him not talking to the people who were actually being held. It was the moment when he looked over at a bunch of likely only Spanish speaking human beings and said, are they treating you well? Mm-hmm. And then took their nod as not confusion, mm-hmm. but yes, see, they're being treated well. This is so bizarre. It is like on Handmaid's Tale when they make the handmaids like say and do things and respond to things in in situations where they're like backed into a corner. Yes, oh, yeah. Yes, sure, yes, I love it here. I'm so happy. Nobody's happy there. Nobody is happy there. Nobody feels, nobody
leaves. The guards aren't happy there.
They're not willing to show their faces on camera,
yeah.
Which is wild because you should be, if you're so willing to stick to it, somewhat proud of your job, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and just remember, these are the conditions in the one they showed you. That they sent him to that one.
Speaking of conditions, there was a photo where there were a bunch of people wearing coats and hats and gloves mm-hmm. inside. And that made me think, it is feels like 190 degrees mm-hmm. at our southern border. It is so hot right now. Mm-hmm. Why would a bunch of people be wearing coats and gloves and hats if it weren't because it is so ridiculously cold in there? Uh-huh. That it amounts to abuse.
Yeah.
Why would people when it's sweltering outside, why would people be wearing coats and hats and gloves?
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't actually notice that when I watched it. Trump also tweeted after that trip saying, Friday's tour showed vividly to politicians and the media how well-run and clean the children's detention centers are. Great reviews. Failing New York Times story was fake. The adult single men areas were clean but crowded, also loaded up with a big percentage of criminals. That's just a statement without any evidence. Sorry, can't let them into our country. If too crowded, tell them not to come to USA and tell the Dems to fix the loopholes. Problem solved. So, I mean, you've got Lindsey Graham, a racist. Mike Pence, who before he was the I can't be alone with another woman guy, was the racist, hard right media personality, Mike Pence, and Trump. And so you can tell that they're in good hands with those three individuals looking on the case.
One more thing also before we go, I don't understand those blankets. Before we go, him saying it's not because they're heartless, it's an overcrowded system, an overwhelmed system. So does it matter why? It matters to us because I think it matters when people are in charge are heartless. But for the vice president, even if you were to say they're not heartless people, they're doing everything they can. So you're almost like, it almost seems like he's saying yes. These human beings here aren't being treated as they should be, but the reason matters. When regardless, you should just be focused on getting them to a point to where they're treated
like
they should be, right?
It matters to him because then they can say it's the Dems' fault for not fixing the system or providing enough funding. And it's also a lie because they're not sexually assaulting people because it's
overcrowded. Exactly.
It's not like when you fit in enough people, you just gotta rape them. But yeah, so that lie continues. And that is, I mean, if you're hoping for any change to the policy, this does not give me a lot of hope, unfortunately. But there are some good people who are pushing for change. Okay, we're gonna take another break. When we come back, another guest is gonna join us. If you take a look at a lot of pop culture these days, there's a lot of concern about technology in the future, what implications it might have for us, from things like Black Mirror to movies, AI and robots. They could be coming for our jobs, we fear. They could be coming for our lives even. But how much should we be afraid? Joining us now to help break it down is Byron Rees, tech CEO and author of The Fourth Age, Smart Robots, Conscious Computers, and the Future of Humanity. Byron, welcome to the show.
Thanks a bunch for having me.
Glad to have you on. Fascinating book. Just really fast before we launch into some of the implications, your book is The Fourth Age. What are the four ages?
I think there are other times when technologies really changed the trajectory of the human race. So I think the first time is when we got speech, and then the second time is when we got agriculture and we settled down and made cities. The third time was two technologies that happened at the same time, writing and the wheel. And each of those changed us forever. And I think robots and AI are gonna do likewise.
So you talk about some of the implications of these technologies, and you also address in your book some of the fears that people have of AI in particular. As I said in the intro, there's a lot of movies about what, you know, Skynet and AIs like that. These sorts of like big predictions about AI, are there any that you think are likely to come true? Are there any that stand out as particularly overblown?
Well, you know, the thing I would point out to people is that when they say AI, they mean one of two very different things. One, simply automation technology. And the only fear people have around that is what you alluded to earlier, losing your jobs. This other kind of artificial intelligence, you know, the kind that you see in the movies, that's a technology we don't know how to build. And interestingly, the assumption behind it is that people are machines. And so nobody knows how to build it. But the idea is, well, if you're a machine, someday we'll build a mechanical you. Mm-hmm. And then it will get better and better. But if you don't think you're a machine, then no, there's no basis to them. Look, I like to see Will Smith battle a robot just as much as the next guy. But that isn't a technology anybody knows how to make. And if you ask AI people, well, when will we get it? They say 5 to 500 years. And I mean, if you drop your dry cleaning off and they say, oh, it'll be ready in 5 to 500 days, you get a new dry cleaner. But nobody knows how to build this. And virtually nobody's working on it, by the way. Almost everybody's working on the other kind, the automation kind.
Well, then let's turn then to the automation, the sorts of things we do know how to make. The concerns that jobs could be very much at risk from this sort of automation, what do you make of that?
I don't buy it. I mean, these technologies do one very simple thing. They increase human productivity. That's all they do. And that's always good for people. If you don't think it's good for people, you should pass a law that everybody's got to work with one arm tied behind their back, because you would create a bunch of jobs. You need twice as many people to do everything, but wages would fall because productivity goes down. And you know, people go back to like, oh, when we got electricity, we didn't lose jobs, and the assembly line and all that. But you don't have to do that even. You know, if you went back 25 years to the day we got the consumer internet, and you looked ahead, people would have said, well, you know, we're going to lose all the travel agents, and we're going to lose all the stockbrokers and the newspapers. And they would have been right about everything. But the problem is you can never see what the technology is going to create. You can never see Uber and Etsy and eBay and Airbnb and all the rest. So the problem with AI is we can spot certain jobs that can be automated, but we can't imagine the jobs that this increased productivity is going to give us. There's a reason in the United States for 250 years unemployment's never gone over 10%, other than the Depression. And that's because always humans take these technologies that increase their productivity and they use them to do more and drive wages up. That is 250 years of economic history in this country.
Actually, I guess sort of continuing that arc there, your book, you do see some potential upsides. One of the concepts you talk about in the book is you talk about the implications of extreme prosperity, which sounds like a good problem to have. What do you mean by that? What are the implications of extreme prosperity?
Look, you think of something like the internet, which is a technology that doesn't have any real smarts to it. We learn to connect computers together with a common protocol. We call that the internet. And think about how that transformed the world and created $25 trillion worth of wealth, 1 million new businesses, transform society and all that. Imagine a technology that will make everybody on the planet smarter. Like go to bed one night and everybody wakes up smarter. That is going to increase our productivity of everybody so much that we can't even really imagine how transformative all of that extra wealth is going to be. I mean, no matter who you are, if you have one of these devices and you put software on it that is AI enabled, you are effectively that smart. And that is an amazing transformative technology. And so I don't worry about this future that, oh, there aren't going to be enough jobs and they're going to be the haves and the have-nots, and the have-nots are, you know, won't be able to compete with the machines. That is not what our future is going to be like.
Okay, well, it is nice to talk to someone who believes that technology will usher in a better age. So far, I spend a lot of my time in terms of technology on social media, and it makes me think that we're going in the opposite direction. But I appreciate you joining us on the show. I wish we had more time to delve into some of these topics. But the book is The Fourth Age, Smart Robots, Conscious Computers, and the Future of Humanity. Byron Reese, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. And finally, the right wing response to Trump's rant over the weekend. We'll break it down after this. Since Donald Trump's racist rant over the weekend, we have been looking for literally anyone on the right who will put up even token resistance to this ridiculous turn from the president. And you're not gonna find it on Fox and Friends, unfortunately. Take a look.
These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements. This tweet that you're just seeing now is clearly going to get, I think, a lot of discussion.
Someone's feeling very comedic today.
One thing I was at, I call the squad the Instagram group, hashtag squad goals and all that. It seems like a number of the things that they say are those memes that you see on Instagram, these somewhat like defiant and inspirational memes. This is real life. Mm-hmm. This isn't social media just having fun, trying to, you know, rile people up. This is real life. The words you say have real life consequences. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration.
So
Somebody's saying a comedian go back. Today.
Yeah, oh, he's feeling comedic. I honestly, I don't know those three people. They're the weekend Fox and Friends crew. They make the weekday Fox and Friends crew look knowledgeable about politics and less like horrific people. That was awful.
Yeah, that's Jedediah Bila. But is that how you pronounce it? She was Meghan McCain before Meghan McCain.
Oh, was she? View. Mm-hmm. She's the worst.
Yeah, that was bad. That was
and also,
absurd.
Man, the like it's so Orwellian on that show. So he goes on this thing about how words have real meanings. It's not just about memes, squad. You have to actually consider the consequences for what you say. Wasn't it great when Trump was just trolling them like a meme? Like they. The people watching that, conservatives, are like, yeah, they're awful because they use memes. I love my president because he trolls people.
Let me tell you, this is what I'm talking about when people say, you know, both sides, or we need to come together, we need to have conversations, we need to do this, we need to represent this large group of America. They need to be seen, they need to see themselves on TV. Roseanne needed a show again, blah, 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 blah. When you find yourself laughing off a racist attack from the president of the United States, you are not a voice that deserves any platform.
Yeah.
You are not a voice that deserves any type of conversation with a member of a marginalized community. You are not a voice that deserves respect in a conversation, because this is the only thing that makes this political is the fact that the president said it. Mm. But the substance of what he said was just simply dangerous.
Yeah.
That is about a lot of what is considered like two sides, or there's both sides, or I see both sides, or everyone has their own opinion, or this or this or that. Racism has no place in two sides. Racism is bad. It is always bad. You know what else is bad? Murder, always bad. Child rape, all bad. Child abuse, all bad.
Yes.
These are all things that we can throw in the all bad bucket forever, and you're not allowed to have a difference of opinion on them.
Yeah, but they do.
Right, somehow.
And she thinks that he raises an important point. An important point when he says that they should go back to their country. I don't think that they ever acknowledge that these people actually come from this country, but regardless,
it doesn't
horrendous.
Matter because you shouldn't say that to people who didn't come from this country.
No, obviously,
yeah.
But I'm saying like when you find yourself, like you, like I don't know those people, but they saw themselves like, I wanna be in media.
Right.
You know what, I wanna comment on news and politics. And then I'm gonna end up apologizing for an old racist. That's gonna be my job. But not just them, the politicians as well. People who their whole lives, they just wanted to be a part of US government. Their job now is to defend Donald Trump from criticism. So look, we've been looking for an elected Republican who will have criticized Trump for what he said. And it's so far we've come up with nothing, but there is someone we can rely on. That is Lindsey Graham, because you'll remember that back in 2015, he called Trump a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot. So if there's anyone who's going to acknowledge the racism, it's the guy who called him a race baiter and a bigot, except not, because this is what Lindsey Graham had to say.
We all know that AOC and this crowd are a bunch of communists. They hate Israel. They hate our own country. They're calling the guards along our border, the Border Patrol agents, concentration camp guards. They accuse people who support Israel of doing it for the Benjamins. They're anti-Semitic. They're anti-America. Don't get down. Aim higher. We don't need to know anything about them personally. Talk about their policy.
Okay, so he has evolved significantly from when he would acknowledge the obvious racism with Donald
Trump.
No, he's
not evolved at all, because when you have
he's now defending him.
Oh, right,
that's
okay, right. Because when you have 20 minutes of, I think Yashar he said this earlier on Twitter, when you, about Susan Collins' statement that broke during the show. When you have a bunch of different negative things to say about the people you were supposed to be defending before you then defend them very small, it's like in fine print.
Yeah.
This is not a statement disavowing the president's words. I don't care. What,
I know,
it's just
I was joking. It's not. He's defending the president. And the president, who is such an idiot, he heard that section, which was totally defending him, where he said he should aim higher. And Trump said, these are congresswomen. What am I supposed to do? Just wait for senators? What am I going to do? Wait until we get somebody else in a higher position, a higher office? He thinks he means literally aim for higher elected officials. He's the dumbest person in our country. So yeah, none are actually criticizing him. There was one representative, Andy Harris, a Republican, who said it's obviously not racist. Clearly it's not racist. He probably meant go back to the district they came from, you know, to the neighborhood they came from. That's what he meant.
Well, they're there.
Even though he said go back to the country you come from. So that's GOP. They got no problem with what Trump said. Thank you as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry I missed your sarcasm there.
It's okay. I'll make it thicker next time.
Yes, please.
We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.